Got ahead of me. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for Clarence and his helper for raising the pipe this morning, and the elders here. And thank you for all being here. You know, this shows you want to learn something. And, I was born on Okanis First Nation. I wasn't born in a hospital. I was born on Okanis First Nation, December the 5th, 1959. Close to Fred Tuckanaw's house over there. Born in a house. Then I grew up on the reserve till I was about 5, 6, or 7. I can't remember. But in December of 1966, the Indian Affairs come with a car, picked up my dad, myself, and my mother. And I thought we were going for a ride, going someplace. But little did I know I was going to a residential school. I remember getting there, sitting on the bench in the hallway while my parents went in the office to go sign me in, I guess. Then they came out and they were heading towards the door, and I tried to go along with them, and they said, no, you have to stay. So I went and sat back on the bench. And that was it. That was the beginning of my days in residential school. First got there, they showered you, cut your hair, take you down to clothing, get you some clothes, school clothes, and what we used to call play clothes. Whatever they give you, you gotta wear, and running shoes. Started out in junior boys, way upstairs. I got these pictures here I wanted to hand out to show you guys. And the top floor, that was the junior boys. I'll just pan them around. The top floor was junior boys, and that's where I was. That's where they put me. The first night I was there, I could hear crying. Kids crying in there. I was wondering what they were crying for. It was the dorm. We lived in a dorm. Bunk beds all around the room, all around, some in the center. It was bunk beds. And you couldn't talk. But late at night, you can hear them crying. People are going to the washroom. You can hear them crying. It wasn't until later on, I found out why they were crying. If you wet the bed, you're taking into the supervisor's room. There's a room at the end of the hallway there. Then they beat you. They'll beat you for wetting the bed. So I made sure I didn't wet the bed. I didn't want to get beaten. I still remember the name of the supervisor. His name was Mr. Barlow. Short little fat, stubby guy that smoked cigarettes all the time. But yeah. That was in junior boys, and you get up in the morning, you make your bed, wash up, put your play clothes on, or else your school clothes. I got there when in the middle of they were having a Christmas break. I didn't go to school until January, so I had to put on my play clothes. And yeah, you'd make your bed, then you go line up. Oh no, go wash up. There's a place where you go wash up. I don't know if some of you guys might remember, you used to have a big circle. You press a step on it and there's water comes out. So a bunch of us can wash up at the same time. Then you go stand in line, wait for breakfast. Breakfast consisted of porridge and toast. Porridge and toast pretty well almost every day. Holy, to this day I can't eat porridge. And the milk they give you was that powdered milk you mix in a pitcher and you stir it up. That was your milk. I can't remember ever eating bacon and eggs for breakfast there. It was just porridge all the time. So I started school in grade one, back in grade one. I was in 66, I started in Balcarres. And Indian Affairs always looked at your record, how many days you've been in school. I've got records of that, how many days I was in Balcarres school, and I missed lots of school. Indian Affairs seen that. And they said I'm better off in residential school. Because, you know, back then you had to go to school. But yeah, and then after I stayed in, like I was in grade one over there in Gordons. I was in junior boys. The following year, I was the second year in. I was back then. Residential school consisted of junior boys, intermediate boys, and senior boys. So three of them. Following year, I was an intermediate, and I left the junior boys. Not only that, my other siblings joined me in. While I was in residential school, I was an intermediate. Had two brothers and a sister join me. It was Leonard and Lyle, and the girl was Teresa. While I was an intermediate. And I knew they were going to have a tough time in junior boys, so I had to try and look after my younger brothers and sisters. Sister as best I could, but I couldn't. Over there, you were separated from the boys to the girls. You had a girl's side and a boy's side, and you couldn't talk to the girls. We had to talk like just amongst the boys. So yeah, and intermediate had a different supervisor. I think his name is Mr. Fritzler. Mr. Fritzler, and he used to look after us intermediates. I can remember one time we had an outing at the school. Some people were going to Regina to do some track and field. The bigger boys, the senior boys. The intermediate boys, they weren't involved in the sports yet, but the senior boys were. But we stopped at Coppell Valley there, and they let us off the bus with lunch and a bunch of us other boys. We were collecting rocks. I remember collecting rocks. And while those other senior boys went to play in Regina. And on top of the hill there, Mr. Fister made us collect rocks. So we collected rocks. Literally didn't know he was So he start making us put him in a, like, make a big G, he said, on the hill. A G. Yeah, G for Gordon's, he said. Okay, so that's what we did. We put them all in. And that's for the ones coming back from the city to see that. So we made that. That was our outing. But I remember that. It was in... then the following year, I was in senior boys. I went through all three of them. I was in senior boys. In 1969, while I was in senior boys, before the church was running the school, like the Roman Catholic Church. But in 69, it changed. 1969, the government took over in 69. They started running the residential school. And then came in William Starr. William Starr was a administrator for Gordon's residential school. And he changed things. He changed the boys from, he just wanted the junior boys and senior boys. That's it. No intermediates. And he wanted to change the school. So he put rooms instead of the big dorms. He changed it to rooms. So there would be about six or seven of us in one room. Like, it was room. It had a door on. So yeah, they changed everything to rooms. And that Mr. Starr, man, he was doing good, but little did I know he was a pedophile. No one knew he was a pedophile. Pedophile is one that preys on young children. I've got sexually abused by him. Not just once, numerous times. And he started a powwow group called the Gordon Dancers. I wanted to join it. I wanted to learn my culture. So I joined the group. Here's a picture of what he started. I joined that group, and we used to go dance powwow all over Saskatchewan, all over Manitoba, all over Alberta. That picture there is a postcard. We made postcards. And we used to have a dance called Rabbit Dance, they call it, or Cahominy. And those postcards, you give you a postcard, if you go give it to a girl, if she accepts it, she has to dance with you. So that's how we used to get them to try and dance with us. We danced up in Churchill, Manitoba, way up north by Hudson Bay there. Those are Inuits up there. We couldn't get one person to dance with us. So we had a bunch of cards. We ended up doing the dance ourselves. They were shy. And then, yeah. But, that Star, he started that group I now realize that why you started that group. It was his way of getting us away from the school so he can do whatever he wants, because we were sexually assaulted in his car, in the room, on the bus. You know, I can talk about it now with hardly shedding a tear, because I'm not the only one. I don't stand, I'm not alone on this. It happened to most of those dancers there. Power dancers. That's why I can talk about it. And this went on for quite a while. And we all, like, I wanted to learn. I was learning trying to learn my culture by dancing powwow and that. But yeah, but being abused kind of turned me away after. To this day, I don't feel like dancing anymore. I don't, you know, I just, it's not there. But I'm glad my daughter's got into it. She dances powwow. But she doesn't know the story. You guys are the first ones. This is the first time telling me the story. Because while I got a lawsuit against the government and Mr. Starr, before they gave me a payment, I had a lawsuit, and the first offer they gave me was $115,000 back in 97. And I said, no, I don't want that offer. What happened to me in that school, I want more. So I had to wait 6 years. Six more years, they counter offered me with $150,000. And that's when I said, yes, I'll take that $150,000. And with that $150,000, I was the first one to get married in Oconee School over there. I was the first one. Because I got moved home in 1998, I moved home. And I settled in 2003. And in 2003, I got married. I was with my wife for over 25 years. She passed away already. So. You know, I know why she left. Because it's that generational, what do you call it? Intergenerational trauma. She couldn't live with me anymore because of my ways. What I'm thinking was right, it was wrong. And she couldn't put up with my, she left. So she left, and I couldn't, like, but yeah, that's, I used to, and when I was I lived in Winnipeg for quite a few, 1979, I moved over there. And I used to drink everything. I used to, anything with alcohol in it, I would drink. I was trying to kill myself through drinking because of what happened to me in that residential school. But, you know, every time I sobered up, it was still there. It was still there, and I couldn't put it away. Like, and I drank everything. I drank Lysol, hairspray, vanilla, rubbing alcohol. I drank all those. Hairspray was the one, and I used to carry a little nail around because, you know, the people don't have nails to, if they buy a can of Lysol or hairspray, they got no way of opening it. They put a nail in it, open both sides, and put it in the water, mix it, water, let out all the air from the air can, and put it in water, mix it, and drink it. And whoever I lent my nail to, they'll give me a drink. So yeah, that's the way I lived the life on the street. I had nothing, and I didn't care if I died. If they would have found me dead, I would, you know, because I was so ashamed of myself, of what went on, what was done to me in that school by Mr. Starr. I was so ashamed, I didn't want to tell anybody, let anybody know. Then when that lawsuit happened, put in my application. Started in 95. I didn't get paid out till 2003. Took me a while. But yeah. And then 2000 and, when did I quit? 2000. No, 1993 I quit. I quit drinking alcohol. Quit drinking, doing drugs. 1993, I quit. So I sobered up because something happened to me over there, but I won't let you guys know what happened. I was charged with a very, very serious offense. My son, my wife was pregnant with my son. I held him in, when he was born, June 29th, 1993, I held him in my arms. I said, if I beat this charge, I gave him three promises. I promised him I'll never touch alcohol again, never do drugs again, or never use violence against anybody. That's when he was born. I gave him those three promises. I told him that if I beat the charge. A couple of years went on the line while I was still charged. 2 years went by and I went to court. I ended up beating the charge. So I keep those promises today. I keep them because that reminds me of what I went through back then. And I'll never go out back to alcohol again. Never do drugs and never use violence against anybody. That's my promise I made. And I named him after me because of those. His name is Junior. Ace Floyd Creeley Jr. That's what his name is. Every time you look at him, you remember my story, what I told you. That's what I promised him those. And now, today I'm still sober. All my kids are grown. I had five of them, but I lost one. Michael, they say it's a car accident, but he was riding with a drunk driver and they rolled. And my wife is gone. So I got four kids left. Two boys and two girls. And you know, I'd like to say that my life was easy, but it wasn't. My life wasn't very easy. I'm 65 years old right now. I'm retired. It wasn't easy. It was hard life. I only went to grade 6 in education, but while I was in prison, I went to education while I was in there to a grade 10. Yes, I was in prison. I went to jail for a while. That was because I do dumb things. That was just to go to dry out in the winter time, get out in the summer, going for the winter. That was street life. I got tattoos to prove, to remind me of what I went through. And right now I'm retired, drawing old age pension. Got a white girlfriend. She's 64, be 65 in October. We're seeing each other for over a year now. She's 64 and I'm 65, and I think she's pregnant.
Yeah, just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, that's all I gotta say. Hey, hey.